Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Welcome to the Outreach Program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be the last of an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the general class license. This is the last class this evening. It'll run about an hour. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, well, this being the last class, I'll just tell you where we're located on EchoLink. We're EchoLink node number 96140. Or IRLP node 9614, or All-Star node AST 27404. I'm cutting down some of this preamble because this is the last one, so there won't be any more enrolling after tonight. It should be mentioned, though, that this course covers only requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Now, should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at voip@voipnet.southcars.com. Now, the session this evening, as all of the sessions, will be recorded and are posted on the website at voip.southcars.com. Letting it drop. Now please note tonight, for all of our class members and instructors, it is extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or not be current and should not be used during the session. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, from what I see, we've got the tapes rolling because, again, you can go on the internet and you can look at these sessions. This is the eighth session of eight for the general class, and tonight we have two excellent instructors again. We have Miss Sunshine, Kathy, K6SUN, down in St. Lucie, Florida, where Sunshine should be. And we have Gary, RMO, in Syracuse, New York. So we're covering the waterfront here. We've got Florida to New York to Kansas. And I hope the rest of you all are listening in, too. Okay, we're going to start with the questions. What we'll do is read the question, give the answer, give a quick summary, or give some information pertaining to the question. And then we'll go quiet for a moment to see if anyone has any comments or any questions. Before we go on to the next question, tonight we'll be covering, as usual, 12 questions. So just sit back and relax and enjoy, and we'll get this thing rolling. And we're going to start with Kathy, K6SUN, who has the first question, and I'll let her begin. Turning it over to K6SUN. Over.
Well, good evening, Mike and Gary and everyone that's connected this evening. And like Mike was saying, this is our final course, so I want to thank you, Gary, especially, for helping out here at the last minute, and for you, Mike, running the sessions. This is Kathy, Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and before I go through the first question, I'll tell you a little bit about what's happening. It's still about 91 here, guys. 92 is a high. It was a very beautiful day. And I think tomorrow is a little bit of the same. No storms today. And actually, I head to school tomorrow for a meeting. But Mike, Gary, I start back officially full-time August the 4th. Kids come back about the 17th. So I've only got about a week left to just rest and relax. But let me pause here for a moment, and we're going to begin this evening's session. All right, we're going to begin with sub-element G0. It's electrical and RF safety. And my question, I think that we've got a couple questions on this. It's G0A, G0 Alpha, RF safety principles, rules and guidelines, and routine station evaluation. My question reads, and it's Golf 0 Alpha 01, what is one way that RF energy can affect human body tissue? And look at that question and put that in your mind as I give you some of these answers. Alpha, it heats body tissue. Bravo, it causes radiation poisoning. Charlie, it causes the blood count to reach a dangerously low level. And Delta, it cools body tissue. So when you're thinking of energy, you know, this question, the answer, correct answer is alpha. It heats the body tissue. You know, this one is really self-explanatory. Think of energy and think of heat. So just simply memorize if you have to and remember the word heat. So with that, I'll turn it out there for any questions or any comments. All right, hearing no questions and no comments on this first question, Gary, the next one is yours. And I believe it's Golf 0 Alpha 02.
And indeed it is. And hello, Kathy. Hello, Mike. And hello, everybody. And speaking of heat, it's like a sauna here at Syracuse's beautiful outer Comstock section. We just jumped up to 92 degrees. And I don't know what the humidity is, but it's pretty humid. And we're going to be seeing 93 to 95 tomorrow with similar conditions. So it should be kind of steamy for us up here. Yes, our question is G0A02, and it reads, which of the following properties is important in estimating whether an RF signal exceeds the maximum permissible exposure, MPE? This is something that you should become familiar with. Your possible options are A, its duty cycle, B, its frequency, C, its power density, or D, all these choices are correct. Well, the correct answer here is D. All these choices are correct. And kind of like what we had in the previous questions, that this should be best memorized, okay? That it's there's a lot of complexity to each one of these elements. MPE is important. It's how long you can stay exposed to RF energy before it does you harm. It's a subject that you can study up on, and you should study up on, because all of those choices: A, its duty cycle, how long you're exposed to it for; B, its frequency, because different frequencies determine how long you can be exposed for; its power density, that's pretty obvious. Lower power, you're going to be safer, right? But if you can remember, when you see that question about MPE, okay, and what factors are important, remember the D. All these choices are correct, and for gosh sakes, don't remember the D part. Just remember all these choices are correct, because that's the right answer. Let me throw it open for any questions or comments right now.
This is KD0CDQ with a comment. I haven't experienced any burns or any tickles from any of these three methods, so I think it's one of these things that once you get burned, you're going to know it, and you'll probably be more aware, like being bit by a dog. So just be aware that if you feel yourself getting a burn, and you wonder what in the world happened, start looking in the book and see what did I do wrong, what needs fixed before you burn yourself any worse, because there's no sense of walking into a dark room, and that's what this becomes. If you get a burn, like walking in a dark room, you bump into something. Well, you're bumping into a lot of electricity. It's going to burn. That's all I've got. KD0CDQ. Any other comments out there? Over.
That's KC2RMO. Well, that's a good point, Mike. I think people tend to forget, especially if you're a little bit newer at this game, that radio frequency energy can be harmful, and you need to know what can hurt you and what your safe limits are. And you get bit the first time, you'll know about it. So the idea is not to get bit, you know. So there you go. So let's move it along to G0A03 and K6SUN. Kathy, take it away.
Well, thank you, Gary. And one comment on your last question, not about the heat and the density or the frequency or the duty cycle, but those, all of these choices are correct. And you know, Gary, that's one of my favorite ones. But if you do know that two of those choices would be correct, you know, it's going to be all is correct. And like Gary said, you don't want to memorize the D, but very possibly looking at the MPE in parentheses, you just sort of thinking of that with all of these choices are correct. My question, like Gary said, is Golf 0 Alpha 03, and it reads, how can you determine that your station complies with the FCCRF exposure regulations? And our choices are alpha by calculation based on FCCOET Bulletin 65, Bravo by calculation based on computer modeling, Charlie by measurement of field strength using calibrated equipment, or D, all of these choices are correct. And once again, Delta is that correct answer. You know, it's highly recommended that each of you download the FCC OET Bulletin 65 and read it over several times. So with that, I'm going to throw it out there once again for any comments or any questions before Gary moves on into the next question.
This is KD0CDQ with another comment. Keep in mind, be a good citizen. Watch where your antennas are. If you have any sloping antennas that come near the ground, make sure people cannot get to it. Not only children, adults too are kind of inquisitive. I was watching Stalag 17 was back on TV the other day in black and white. And there was one point where the German guard sees a wire going from the volleyball net to the building, and he puts his hand on it to feel, what's this wire all about? And I was thinking, well, that was kind of odd that he didn't get a burn from it, because they were transmitting at the time in the building. They were doing a transmission. But that's the only time I've ever seen anything like that in a movie where they ever showed a hot wire. But in that case, nothing happened. So be a good citizen. Keep your wires protected, either fenced or high enough, or somehow where especially children and maybe pets don't get involved. You don't want to see a squirrel get fried either. That's all I got. Over.
Well, thank you so much, Mike and Gary both. The next question is yours, Gary, and it's Golf 0 Alpha 05. And it's another one of those that has all of these choices are correct. So maybe we can have a triple header. Over to you, Gary.
And indeed it is G0A05. And it reads, what must you do if an evaluation of your station shows RF energy radiated from your station exceeds permissible limits? Now, here's your possible answers. So, and there isn't all these choices are correct in there, but let's listen to them all and make sure. Your options are A, take action to prevent human exposure to the excessive RF fields. B, file an environmental impact statement, EIS-97, with the FCC. C, secure written permission from your neighbors to operate above controlled MPE limits, or D, all these choices are correct. Well, here's one where the D isn't correct, okay, because all these choices are not correct. The right answer is A, take action to prevent human exposure to the excessive RF fields. Let me buy a nickel, and we'll go into an explanation. Okay, take action to prevent human exposure to the excessive RF fields. This may include lowering your power level, moving your antenna, etc. Remember the question that we had a couple ago about the different elements of MPE, whether an RF signal exceeds the the MPE, and those are all those elements that go into it. So if your level is too high, you know, drop your output, move your antenna further away from where people can get harmed by it, you know, all those things. It's all common sense, but the key here is to remember to take action You know, you're expected to take action. If you find out that you're exceeding the MPE, you have to take action to prevent it. Let me throw it open to some questions or comments right now. Nothing heard, so we'll go to G0A09 and K6SUN.
Thank you, Gary, once again, and it is Golf 0 Alpha 09, and it reads, what type of instrument can be used to accurately measure an RF field? Alpha, we have a receiver with an S meter. Bravo, a calibrated field strength meter with a calibrated antenna. Charlie, a SWR meter with a peak reading function. And D, an oscilloscope with a high stability crystal marker generator. Your correct answer is Bravo. It's a calibrated field strength meter with a calibrated antenna. Now, if it's decided that a field strength meter is to be used, these can be rented when needed. So, any questions, any comments before we move on?
KC2RMO with a comment.
Go right ahead, Gary.
I suspect I'm going to say the same thing that you were, but if you can rent these, or if you belong to a club, or even some of your local nets, if you just talk to the guys on the nets locally, most folks would be more than happy to lend you one. So there's two options for you as well. So you can rent the meter, you can talk to some folks at your club and see if they've got a meter available. Or, on one of the local nets, just throw it out there. Hey, anybody got a field strength meter that I could maybe borrow? And I'm sure you'll get plenty of answers on that one. This is KC2RMO going back to the net.
All right. Thank you, Gary, so much for that input. And, any of the questions that I've given out there and you have some additional information, you're more than happy to come in and add the information, because it seems a little bit quiet out here and we're moving a little probably too quick. But you have the next question, Gary, so I'm going to turn it over to you, and it's Golf 0 Alpha 10.
How about that? It is Golf 0 Alpha 10. It reads, what is the one thing that can be done if evaluation shows that a neighbor might receive more than is allowable limits of RF exposure from the main lobe of a directional antenna? Okay, so here you are. You've got this this killer Yagi sitting up on your roof, and you got it pointed in such a way that it's zapping your neighbor, right? So here's your options. A, change to a non-polarized antenna with higher gain. B, post a warning sign that's clearly visible to the neighbor. C, use an antenna with a higher front-to-back ratio. Or D, take precautions to ensure that the antenna cannot be pointed in their direction. Well, that's your answer right there. Take precautions to ensure that the antenna cannot be pointed in their direction. That's the problem in the first place, right? You've got this thing aimed at your neighbor. You're beaming concentrated RF energy in their direction, and it's not good for them. So you are expected, and that's the key. Let me just buy a nickel. When you read these questions, if you consider that, first of all, it's pretty much self-evident, right? Take precautions to ensure that the antenna cannot be pointed in their direction. But there's a reasoning, and the reasoning is that you are expected to correct those situations. And this is a pretty obvious situation. You've got it pointed at this guy. It's not good for this guy, so turn the thing so it's not zapping him, okay? That is your responsibility, your expectation. So if you read it with that in mind, it's pretty evident. It stands up on its own there. Take precautions to ensure that the antenna cannot be pointed in their direction. So we'll throw that open for comment or questions right now.
Now, if Homer Simpson lives next door to you, he might enjoy that. Now, I haven't heard much about interference in people's televisions or other electronics any longer, but there still may be some of that about. So I think we're going to go away from this type subject. But keep in mind, if you have a neighbor that has any comments, look into it. Look and see if maybe it is something that you're doing that's causing their problem. But more than likely, it's not your radio. More than likely, it's not. But it's good and neighborly to offer to ask them what time it happened and things like that to see if you were on the air. Just so you feel comfortable and they feel comfortable, because you want to keep neighborly things neighborly. That's all I've got, KDZO, KDQ. This is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and we're going over the general class questions. And if you look in the text box, you will see the question that's coming up next. Over.
Thank you, Mike. And I've got G0B03 for K6SUN. Kathy, take it away.
Well, thank you so much, Gary, and thank you so much, Mike. And this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and my question is, like Gary said, Gulf 0 Bravo 03. And it reads, which size of fuse or circuit breaker would be appropriate to use with a circuit that uses AWG number 14 wiring? And our choices are Alpha 100 amperes, Bravo is 60 amperes, Charlie is 30 amperes, and Delta is 15 amperes. So your correct answer here is actually Delta. You know, if one remembers that a size 12 wire uses a 20 amp breaker, then a 14 gauge wire will use a 15. Or if you don't want to remember that, you just want to remember something with that question and something in the answer, maybe you would want to choose 15 because it's closest to 14. Just a clue there, and maybe it's an easier way. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, along with the KC2RMO and KD0ZDQ, doing the final class of the general outreach course. Do we have any questions on this question or any comments on those that we have talked about thus far?
You know, I would throw that back to Gary's answer about checking with the club and friends and people on the net. If you're not sure about wiring, ask some people. There's always somebody in the group that's really into that and can give you the answer, so you don't get confused. But look at 1415. That's maybe the easy way to remember it. Just like Kathy said, 12 is 20, and see, they're kind of related. But you're looking at a relatively small wire, 14 AWG, so it's 15 amp, like your cigarette lighter in the car. I guess you don't call it that anymore. But if it's not much of a wire, you don't need much of a fuse. Over.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. And I'm not sure about cigarette lighters in cars anymore, because mine does not work even for the outlet for my phone. So thank you for that. And actually, the next question, I believe, is Gary, and I believe it's Galva 0 Bravo 04. Gary, KC2RMO, the next one is yours.
I don't think they call them cigarette lighters anymore. I think they're auxiliary power outputs or something like that. I have to look at my owner's manual and see, but they don't call them cigarette lighters. And indeed, that answer, or the question rather, is G0B04. And it's, which of the following is a primary reason for not placing a gasoline-fueled generator inside an occupied area? A, danger of carbon monoxide poisoning. B, danger of engine overtorque. C, lack of oxygen for adequate combustion. Or D, lack of nitrogen for adequate combustion. Well, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this one out. The answer is, of course, A, the danger of carbon monoxide poisoning. It's just as bad as running your car in the garage with the doors shut. It's that's a no-brainer. This one's a gift. So if you see that, obviously, it's the danger of carbon monoxide poisoning. You simply do not run an internal combustion engine indoors. Any comments for that? Nothing. Okay, it's like running with scissors. You know, you don't want to do that. So we'll go to G0B06 and K6SUN. Kathy, it's all you.
All right. Thank you so much, Gary. Running with scissors. You know, that's a good clue out there, and I'm not sure if I've ever done that, but sometimes just standing with scissors is not good. Yes, my question is Golf 0 Bravo 06. and it reads, why must the metal enclosure of every item of station equipment be grounded? And our choices are alpha, it prevents a blown fuse in the event of an internal short circuit. Bravo, it prevents signal overload. Charlie, it ensures that the neutral wire is grounded. And Delta, which is the correct answer, it ensures that hazardous voltages cannot appear on the chassis. You know, this not only helps controlling stray voltages, but also helps your antenna as well. So, any further comments or questions on this question before we move on?
RMO with a comment.
You're right ahead, Gary. You've got it.
All right, thanks, Mike. You cannot pay enough attention to station grounding or to RF grounding. So, any ground is important, and I think people kind of just look at it as a necessary evil. They'll clamp up to something that looks like a ground, and they'll say that it's good. Pay attention when you set that station up. Pay attention to the way you have things grounded, because it can make such a difference in the way that your station performs and in the quality of that performance and in the safety of your station. Grounding is an important discipline to get yourself into. And it doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be expensive. I think I've mentioned this before. The components I use are standard electrical components. I use bus bars from panel boards, and I strip out the copper ground from Romex that I have left over, you know, and we use that for ground buses, and the antenna is grounded with short lengths of number 8 wire, and everything works very nicely, but you got to pay attention to the grounding. It's really, really important. So I will just pass that nickel's worth of free advice along, and I think Mike has something to say too. So Mike, talk.
Yes, I do. The grounding is something you forget about, and the only time you remember is like when we had field day last month. Then you get ready to pull your rig to take it with you, and you see another wire attached back there. Well, that's about the only time I look at that ground wire. But even when I went on field day, I brought ground wire, and we had a ground rod, and I did ground my radio. Even though it was only a few hours I'm going to be out there in the field, I did the same thing in the field as I do in my home. And then I remembered when I came back home, hook up that wire again. Okay? That's about the only time you're probably going to mess with the ground wire. Once you got it hooked up, just hook it up and forget it, unless you're going outside with that rig somewhere else. But thank you, Gary. Yes, it is very important, those ground wires, and we think nothing of it, but they're important. Over.
Keep them short, keep them tight, and keep them clean. And life will be happy in the ham shack, that's for sure. I guess I got the next one. It's G0B07, and that reads, which of these choices should be observed when climbing a tower using a safety belt or harness? Okay. Here's your choices. A, never lean back and rely on the belt alone to support your weight. B, confirm that the belt is rated for the weight of the climber and that it's within its allowable service life. C, ensure that all heavy tools are securely fastened to the belt D-ring. Or D, all these choices are correct. Well, you think it was D? You'd be wrong. Okay, the answer is B, Baker. Confirm that the belt is rated for the weight of the climber and that it's within its allowable service life. This is just good common sense. If you're going to climb a tower, if you're going to be a brave soul and climb that tower, and you've got a belt on, you want to make sure that, number one, it can hold you, and number two, it's in good enough shape to hold you. Simple stuff. Again, it's not rocket science. Let's throw it open to any comments right now.
I can give some advice on that. Back in the day when I came out of the military, I went to work for the phone company, and the first thing they did was they sent me to climbing school. And we were climbing poles in those days, so we had the wood climbers. So I didn't climb any towers, but I climbed a lot of poles. And I'll tell you, with that belt, one thing they do have you do, just like when I was a volunteer fireman, you put the belt on and they make you lean back at school. They want you to be comfortable with the cleats holding into the wood of the tree, the pole, and that the belt will hold you. They want you to have confidence in your belt, but don't play around with that. I agree with Gary. I wouldn't climb anymore. If some fellows like to climb, let them do it. You stay on the ground and be ground crew. But important thing with ground crew, wear helmets. I know there's not a question pertaining to that, but I think a helmet is important. For I did see a wrench fall and hit a guy right in his baseball cap just about a year ago. And it didn't tickle. He had a headache for quite a while. Just a guy on a pole just dropped a wrench. So as important as keeping, having a good belt and knowing how to use it, it's just as important, wear a helmet if you're going to be down below helping somebody on a pole. That's so important for the ground crew. That's all I've got. Over.
Well, that's a good point. You know, little things mean a lot, and something like a wrench doesn't seem like it's that serious, but, you know, when that thing falls from 30 feet, it gets very serious. So, you know, and in this particular case where we're talking about that climbing belt, again, you know, this is just common sense. Make sure that it's heavy enough to hold you, and make sure that it's not some beat-up old thing that is going to fall apart halfway up, because it's not going to do you any good, and it's your health and welfare that are at stake there. So common sense, let it rule, right? And we'll move along to G0B08 and Kathy, K6SUM, this one's all yours.
Oh, thank you, Gary, and actually it is my last question, the last time you'll hear me on the General Course 2015. And hopefully, Mike or Gary, as you conclude this evening, you'll actually call out to John, KB3IGH. He's in the text box. He's also connected. You know, it's been a long time since I've taken my General, I think about 2010, but he did just take that in June and passed it. So maybe some advice to people listening would be good on John's part. So maybe you can throw that out to him, Mike, before we cut the recordings. But let me pause for just a moment and go into my final question. All right. My final question is Golf0Bravo08. It reads, what should be done by any person preparing to climb a tower that supports electrically powered devices? And actually, this one also is common sense, but I'll go through the four choices. Alpha is notify the electric company that a person will be working on the tower. Bravo is make sure all circuits that supply power to the tower are locked out and tagged. Charlie is unground the base of the tower, and Delta is that favorite one I like. All of these choices are correct, but again, all of these choices are correct is the wrong answer. Bravo is actually the correct answer. And now when you're preparing to climb a tower, you want to make sure all circuits that supply power to the tower are locked out and tagged. Bravo is the correct answer. And again, I said, use common sense. With that, let me throw it out there for any comments or any questions.
It's KC2RMO with a comment. First, John, let me give you a round of applause here. Good work on passing that general. And I'll also give you the world-famous nickel's worth of free advice. Go for that extra, all right? It may take you a while, and that's fine. Because you've got a good ticket there with the general, but you'll feel like a king when you get that extra, and that's for sure. It's worth chasing for it. The other thing I wanted to comment on, let me just buy a nickel. Lockout, tagout. I used to work in heavy industry. I used to set up machinery for production, and we lived by lockout tagout, and I'll tell you it's no joke. Before those procedures were instituted, I had a guy cut off his arm 30 feet away from me, and it was because he didn't have that machinery de-energized. It's simple stuff, but it's important stuff. And it when you're dealing with these sorts of things that that we're dealing with, especially in this case, you're preparing to climb a tower that has electrically powered devices on it. It's a direct path to the ground. Some of these voltages can be lethal, and you want to make sure that they are de-energized and everybody knows about it. And that's lockout, tagout. Very important stuff. Back to you. This is KC2RMO.
Yes, John, again, congratulations, as I put in the text box. And I agree with Gary. Start looking towards the extra. Don't let it get away from you. You know what we're trying to tell you? What I did, I'll give you this advice. Set a date. Maybe it's 5 months from now. Maybe it's 6 months from now. I don't know. Pick a date on the calendar. Mark it, extra exam, and start aiming toward it as if there's a person that you're accountable to. And it's good if you can find somebody in the club or locally who's going to be accountable and ask you, how you doing, to keep you hot. You need somebody to be on your case to keep you hot, to keep on studying for the extra. And I think you need a date. Otherwise, you're going to keep putting it off before you know it, a year has passed. So I would set a date. I would try to find somebody to be my antagonist that keeps reminding me, hey, how you doing with the studying? And keep at it. Do it piece by piece. It's like eating a pizza. Take one section at a time and master it. Go on to another section at a time and master it. Take your time, but have a target. Don't just have it open-ended. If it's open-ended, I don't know if a guy ever gets around to it. Because about 2 years ago, we had an extra class in the club, and we licensed about 5 or 7 people in the club. They all got their extra at the same time. But if we hadn't had that class, those 5 or 7 guys would not have got their extra. They were just drifting. They're just drifting out there. You need somebody to be accountable to. And let it drop and come back. And also, when I used to climb those wooden poles in the rain, your legs tingle. I wasn't smart enough at 25, 26 years of age to realize I was getting electrocuted. So I would just stay up there and work on those poles, and I thought that was kind of cool, feeling the jingle in my legs, you know, the electric coming down, because all the telephone poles had electrical wires at the top. And on rainy days, those grounds aren't worth much. Even though the poles are supposedly grounded, I don't know. I used to feel the tingle, but I thought it was just neat. You know, I didn't think much of it. But if I'd have got bit once, then I would be seeing a different tale, probably, if I had one left. So if you're going to do any climbing, go with a pro. Have somebody that's really a pro, not somebody that does it as a hobby, but somebody that has to do it professionally, and let them show you. We have our classes at Faith Technology, which is a corporation that trains pole climbers and provides pole climbers for the utilities. And when we go into the training room, they got all the belts hanging on the wall. They got some heavy belts, heavier stuff than I ever used. And indoors, they actually have 3 towers built inside the building. And the students, or they get recertified routine. They have to climb those towers inside the building according to spec and do it the right way. And I thought it's pretty cool having towers inside a building, but that's for training. But they're pros. We are not. That's all I've got. KD0CDQ. Okay, back to you, Gary.
I'd like that. I'd like to give that a try. It's indoors. It's safe. You know, it'll be all right. Thank you, Mike. And, hey, I've got the last question for the last class of this course. So this is it, friends and neighbors. This is the home port. We've made it here, and that is G0B09. And the question reads, why should soldered joints not be used with the wires that connect the base of a tower to a system of ground rods? Here's your options. A, the resistance of the solder is too high. B, the solder flux will prevent a low conductivity connection. C, solder has too high a dielectric constant to provide adequate lightning protection. Or D, a soldered joint will likely be destroyed by the heat of a lightning strike. And this answer is D. D, delta, a soldered joint will likely be destroyed by the heat of a lightning strike. This is very true. Use good electrical clamps and stay away from the solder. Remember this, there's a basic that my electronics instructor, Mr. Lombard, back at Nottingham High School in 1969 taught us, and a good solder connection starts with a good mechanical connection. He drilled that into us. And really, in this case, you know, Mr. Lombard's words still hold true. Use a clamp. Use a clamp. Clamp that. Clamps are a dime a dozen at Home Depot. You know, clamp it. Make like Jed. Make like Jed and clamp it. That's the way to do it. And don't worry about the solder. It takes a hit from lightning. That ground's going to open right up, and you have no protection whatsoever. But with a clamp on that is going to hold, and the lightning goes to ground, and you have at least that much protection. So I'll throw it open to any questions. Remember, this is it. This is it. So any questions that you have, speak now or forever hold your peace. And for that matter, you might hear Mr. Jingles in the background there. I'm not sure. but speak now, and or any comments that you have, we want to hear from you too. So it's open for that.
Let me add this. There is a device that's like a lightning arrester, I guess they call it. If you're going to have a tower with an antenna, I have an arrester on there that is designed to melt. Hopefully, in that split fraction of a second, that I'm going to call it lightning arrester, is supposed to melt and disconnect the wire from the antenna from going into your radio or going into your house, into your shack. Now, that's such a quick thing. I don't know if the thing will ever work, but it's kind of expensive. I think it was about $30 or so. I kind of, whoa, why is this so much? But this little device, I don't know. It's a lightning arrester deal. But it's a little box, and it looks like it's got jelly inside of it. But what it is, it's actually a solder that will melt. And supposedly it should break that circuit before it goes to your home. Now, whether it works or not, I don't know, but it's out there, and they do recommend that you put it on there. So it's an arresting device. It's a little box. It's kind of neat and costs too much money, but it's. I feel comfortable that it's out there. When it does lighten and thunder, I do not disconnect my antennas. I leave them connected. I leave everything connected. And it's been working, and here in Kansas we get a lot of lightning strikes here. But I haven't had an effect on it, although I have had the effect on my neighbor's car in the driveway, but that wasn't my cause. He got hit. Imagine a car in the driveway being hit, and he lost all his electrical. The car just, everything went foul. But luckily, my 35-foot tower, it didn't hit mine, hit his little car in the driveway. So you never know, guys. If you have any questions now, this is the time to ask. This is your last chance. KD0CDQ, come on aboard if you have a question.
Just do a little quick follow-up comment on those lightning arresters. You do feel better with those on. I cannot use one on my loop because the loop carries DC up the transmission line to power the motor that tunes it. I am fanatical about disconnecting that thing when the weather gets ugly, because before I had the loop, I was just using a dipole, and I had the lightning arrester on it, and I felt better about that. But I have that paranoia with this thing, you know. So I'm as long as I have the loop, I will not have the comfort of a lightning arrester. But it's cheap insurance, that's for sure, and they do work. So if you have an antenna that you can use them on, use them. Back to you.
Yes, you got me thinking. I also have a J-pole up on the same mast, and I don't have anything between the J-pole and my 2440 radio. I don't think I have anything to break that. But, you tie your left shoe and leave the right shoelace loose, and that's kind of what I guess I do without thinking. That's all I've got. Okay. I hope that everyone understands who's listening that these classes are recorded, and they are available to you at the South Coast Amateur Radio Service website. I'm not going to give you the address, because every time I give you the address, I give it to you wrong. And Kathy is always good about putting it in the text box. But if you have any questions, if we can help you in any way with any of the test questions, just send us an email, and we'll be glad to get back with you and try to make you more comfortable with the combination of question and answer. And again, they're all online, so you can look at the questions we've covered. We do 12 times 8, that must be about 96 or so questions we cover. was quite a few of the questions. So if you ever need any help preparing even for your extra, just contact South Cars with any questions you may have about how should you go about studying and how you should go about, there's websites where you can go and test yourself, and that's what I did repeatedly, just like you did with the tech and the general. Repeatedly keep taking those extra tests and find your weak points, because there will be weak points, and Kathy did put the address on there in the text box for those who want to contact us. Okay, there she goes doing that. Thank you, Kathy. But we're here to help, and we hope we help somebody out there. If not today, somewhere along the line, and we pick up these Q&As and get hot and get going. But I want to tell you, get going. Take that general test, and when the time comes, get ready. Take the extra. Don't let it linger. People let it linger for too many years, and you don't need to let it linger like that. That's all I've got. This is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. We just completed a study of the general class for 8 sessions, and we'll be back again with another test probably sometime next year. I don't know when it is. I really don't have it in my mind at this time. So, I see KF4ZDL is coming in there. Thank you for coming in. And if you have any questions, get in touch with us. Now what we're going to do is, first we're going to see if there's any questions, and then we're going to have Kathy and probably Gary disconnect the recordings. First, is there anyone with any questions who would like to come on the air or put anything in the text box? Please do it now. Over. Okay, at this point, if we'd all be quiet and stay off the air, Kathy and probably Gary are going to disconnect recordings. So when they disconnect recordings, there needs to be everybody off the air. Okay, so let's go silent now until they tell us all the recordings are clear. KD0CDQ.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in our series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.